Hi, it's editing Aaron here with some sad news about the audio quality of this episode. Guess who accidentally recorded this episode on their AirPods instead of clicking their microphone? Oops, it was me. Aaron and I both love Bessie so much, and we had so much to share about Bessie Smith's life and queerness in the blues movement, and I'm just really sad that I made this mistake and disservice to such a great film. But I hope that you will stick around and join us anyway, or maybe you can go watch Bessie and come back to see if you're interested to learn more, because truly, what an amazing movie this was. Thank you for listening.
Hello, you're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we're gay, and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies. And sometimes we talk about other stuff. I'm Erin, and it's just us girls in here.
And I'm Erin, and gin'll make you crazy. Why don't you let me buy you a whiskey instead?
Oh!
Wow. How about it, Erin?
Oh my god, I would love some gin.
Yeah, why don't you pour yourself a gin and we can talk about the topic of this week's episode, Bessie.
Honestly, I should have made a gin drink for this. You know, when all of the mentions of gin in Bessie really got me thinking about when we did our The Bitter Tears of Petra von Kant episode. And I drank a massive gin and lemonade while we were recording. And then by the end, I was like, ugh.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh my god, I'm so excited to talk about Bessie.
Me too. Oh my god, this movie was so fucking good.
Good. I'm so glad that you thought it was. I really didn't know how it would be going into it, but I love Pariah by Dee Reese, so I was excited to watch it.
Yeah.
As I mentioned at the end of our last episode, Queen Latifah is like my number one celebrity crush. Obsessed with her.
Yeah.
So seeing her in the lead role as Bessie was excellent. She did such a great job.
Yeah, this is so good. It's available on streaming on HBO Max and Hulu and potentially some others.
I didn't know it was on HBO Max, but I should have guessed because it's an HBO original. I watched it on Tubi. Because it's free on Tubi as well. So you don't need an account. You don't need anything, but there are ads. But you can literally watch it for free on Tubi right now.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Wow. Funnily enough, when I finished watching Bessie on Tubi, it autoplayed The Heat, starring Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock.
Oh no!
And I was like, no, like turn it off.
What kind of algorithm combination made that happen?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. Is like, I literally don't know how we got from Bessie to The Heat starring Melissa McCarthy.
Were they like, well, we don't have Will You Ever Forgive Me, so what else is Melissa McCarthy in? Oh, The Heat. Perfect. Autoplay right now. Perfect.
The gays love Melissa McCarthy. The gays Sandra love Bullock.
Melissa McCarthy. Melissa McCarthy played a lesbian in a biopic once.
Just like how Queen Latifah played a queer woman in a biopic here today.
Yeah.
I will admit, I was not paying super close attention to potential content warnings while I was watching. I jotted down content warnings for anti-Black racism and for abusive relationships, but is there anything else that you can think of? I guess alcoholism.
Yeah, I would say alcoholism. Abusive parental figures.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. You're right.
And I think that's about it.
Random acts of violence.
Yeah.
Again, just so excited to get into this. So I'll start us out by giving a summary of what Bessie is all about.
For those of you who have not seen it.
As we mentioned, Bessie was a made-for-TV movie on HBO that was released in 2015. And it was directed by Dee Reese, who I would say is most known, at least for our audience base, for making the movie Pariah in 2011, which we'll talk a little bit more about later. But I want to do an entire episode about Pariah at some point.
Yeah.
because it is such a good movie. Bessie is about a blues singer, Bessie Smith, who's played by Queen Latifah, and it takes place in the early 20th century. At the start of the film, Bessie is just a young aspiring blues singer, and she's been barely making ends meet by performing in vaudeville shows with her brother Clarence. And she faces continual rejections by producers because the producers of different shows think that she's too dark-skinned to feature. So she lives in a boarding house, and her girlfriend Lucille often comes to stay with her, serving as emotional support while she's trying to start her career. One night, Bessie goes to see blues legend Ma Rainey, who's played by Monique, and she goes to see her perform. In an attempt to make her own big career move, Bessie sneaks onto Ma Rainey's train after the show, and she boldly asks to join her traveling performance. Ma, kind of reluctantly, but also very openly, agrees to let Bessie join the show. And she reveals that, like Bessie, she also kisses women, kissing her female assistant right in front of her. And they find some solidarity in this moment right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So Bessie starts out on the show doing these odd jobs, and then she begins doing opening numbers for Ma. Notably, one night she opens when Ma does a drag performance blues number, which is shocking for the audience and very cool for Bessie to see. Eventually, Bessie starts becoming more and more popular and gaining a following for her opening act. And she and Ma have this big fight, and they both end up going their separate ways, and she leaves the tour. Bessie starts headlining some shows after she returns home. And she also begins casting other performers for her shows, too. And at this point, a man named Jack Gee, who's played by Michael K. Williams, insists that he would love to meet her. She thinks that he's applying to be in her show, but turns out he has no talent, and he's actually applying to be her boyfriend. she gets with him, and he also begins providing some security for her and some management for her career as well. Jack gets Bessie a record deal with Columbia Records, which ends up skyrocketing her career to amazing heights, but it also brings a lot of press coverage with it. She suffers a stabbing from a man in a bar, which brings up a lot of childhood trauma for her. When Bessie was a young girl, her parents died, and her oldest sister, Viola, was left to raise her and all of her siblings. And Viola was horribly abusive, and in a flashback, we see that she either threatened or did stab Bessie with a knife at one point during her childhood. As press of her career has increased, one of her shows is attacked by the Ku Klux Klan, though she very boldly faces them and scares them away, which wins a lot of applause from the crowd. And it's a very impressive and moving scene.
Absolutely.
Bessie ends up reconnecting with her sister Viola and kind of smoothing things over. And eventually she uses her money from her career to buy this giant mansion. And she invites all of her siblings, including Viola, to move in with her, Jack, and Lucille, who she's still seeing. She also starts an affair with her bootlegger, who is a man named Richard, and she adopts a son who she names Jack Jr. So this is a point where she's really growing her family and bringing all of her people together in one place. All the while, with her career, while she's married Jack, Bessie has stayed with Lucille. But one night, Bessie is taking a bath and Lucille is caring for her in the bathroom. And Lucille announces that she's leaving Bessie because she wants to have her own life and her own family. Bessie doesn't say anything when Lucille says this, but she begins to silently weep in the tub. And after this, we don't see Lucille again. Following this, Bessie learns that Jack is financially supporting his mistress with her income. And the two have a horrible fight, with Jack punching her so hard that she falls down to the ground. It's at this point that he leaves her, and Bessie enters this depressive spiral where she's drinking copious amounts of gin and laying in bed. Jack returns to kidnap her son, Jack Jr., who the entire time shouts that he doesn't want to leave and that he wants to stay with his mom. And it's revealed that Viola helped Jack plan and orchestrate the kidnapping. Because of the Great Depression and presumably her own depression as well, Bessie loses her fortune, and she and her brother Clarence move into this small apartment together, and he takes her back to meet with Ma Rainey, and the two reconcile. All of their fighting in the past is water under the bridge, and Ma supports Bessie in healing from some of the big losses that she's recently experienced, the loss of her son, her girlfriend, her marriage, her money, her career, all of this. And she leaves Ma's home feeling healthier and happier. And it's at this point that she begins officially dating her bootlegger, Richard, who she was having the affair with. Now that she's feeling better, she gives another performance. And at this performance, a young record producer and civil rights activist named John Hammond scouts her. He asks Bessie to do a comeback tour and he'll produce it. And he says he's aiming for the racial integration of mainstream music. He connects her to several other prominent musicians, and her comeback ends up being a big success. And that's how the film ends.
God, it's such a good movie.
It's such a good movie.
It's so good. Oh my God.
I'm glad that the movie ends on a high note, because obviously this is a biopic. This is based on real life blues musician Bessie Smith. In real life, it wasn't too long after her comeback that she died really tragically in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, her then boyfriend, was driving and he survived unharmed. And Bessie, after she died, she was buried in an unmarked grave. And it wasn't until about 30 years later that Janis Joplin and Juanita Green paid for a tombstone for her.
Yeah. And oh my God. That, like, super sucks, because it was Jack Gee who apparently took a lot of the money from her estate mm-hmm. after she died. And then even when there was a fundraiser in order to raise money to get a tombstone, he then also took that money. And I can't believe that she was in an unmarked grave for such a long period of time. It's horrible.
I know.
God.
For being the queen of blues, really. She at the time that she was performing, she was the highest paid Black entertainer.
Yeah. Oh my God.
There's no words. It's just so awful.
There's no words at all.
Thankful to Dee Reeves for highlighting an incredibly important historical Black queer woman and letting her story end on a positive note, you know?
Yeah. I think so too. It was funny because I watched this movie and it ends on such a high note, and just like knowing like the little bit about Bessie that I knew just like before watching this, I just like immediately like started Googling all this stuff about her, and then like read about the fact that she died and didn't get a tombstone, and then so I'm just like crying after watching this movie because of
I
this.
Know it's so sad.
Oh my God. And fucking poor Jack Jr. was her adopted son. Apparently like she wasn't able to get custody of him. And, like, then he ended up, like, being, like, abused for years. He would be, like, locked in the basement and, like, not be given food by his dad and, like, shit like that. Just, like, so horrible. Also, fun stuff from the movie that I then also got to look up and find out that was taken from real life, as you might expect. The Ku Klux Klan attacking her show and her coming out and scaring them away. That happened 100%. One of the things that she was, like, most known for in her life was, like, if people were, like, I don't know, racist towards her, like, she would not take it. And mm-hmm. there's an interview with Jack Jr. where he's talking about a time where his mom saw a convertible and she went into the car dealer to buy it. And the guy behind the counter like laughed at her and was like, you don't have that money to buy that. And so she went to the bank, got the money out in cash, and then threw it at the guy and then drove out of the dealership with the convertible. Like stuff like that is just so incredible.
Yeah.
Very satisfying. What was there other facts that you learned about Bessie?
So I learned there's the scene where before she signs the deal with Columbia Records, she auditions to be on is it W.E.B. Du Bois record label. And when she gets there, her audition is a little rough. She asks for gin and it's during Prohibition. And so they're like, ma'am, we don't have anything illegal in our facility right now. She tries to sing, but she can't. So she clears her throat and spits like very obnoxiously into a cup before she sings. And they reject her because her audition did not go smoothly. And that also happened in real life. She really did spit in the cup, really, really did ask them for alcohol. All of that was real. Also, Lucille, her girlfriend, is a fictional character that was written for the sake of this film. Honestly, which reminded me, bring up another episode, when we did the Gia movie that was also made for HBO. And also made me really sad. She also had a fictional lover in that film as well, that was inspired by real life, but was not totally accurate to real life.
To represent all the women that she's been with.
Exactly. So Lucille was fictional, but Bessie did have several female lovers and companions in her life, including a few that were longer term. But it's speculated that many of her relationships were not quite so tender and soft as was depicted here. She was once quoted saying, "I got 12 women on the show and I can have one every night if I want it." So, again, not quite so tender and innocent as is shown here. It's even theorized that she may have hooked up with Josephine Baker at one point.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah, she was most known in her life for making music that reflected a lot of issues, including poverty, inequality, racial conflict, incarceration, adultery. And she was really, really well known for normalizing dark-skinned, working-class Black women's empowerment in the entertainment business, specifically about ditching domestic life, partying, having good sex, having a great time, and generally recognizing that not only is it okay to be bad sometimes, but that it feels good and that you can have fun, breaking society's rules.
Hell yeah.
Really, really fucking radical, honestly.
Seriously. I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about the movie.
Oh, that's okay. What are you thinking about?
It's funny. It did really remind me of Gia. I guess just probably because they're both like produced by HBO. Though I totally forgot that this was a HBO like made for TV movie. Like obviously it doesn't look like that. It looks like a regular movie.
You said the same thing when we watched Gia.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And then you were like, that's because it's not TV. It's HBO.
That's the catchphrase.
Feels like this could have been shown in a theater. And maybe it's a shame that it wasn't. But also at the same time, it won 4 Emmys and several other awards, too, including for Best Feature Film. So
right. I guess, like, one interesting thing was apparently, like, she was the highest paid Black entertainer at the time, which I would absolutely believe. But her record with Columbia, she got paid $125 for each side of the record and then no royalties. And so even though it sold, like, millions and millions of copies, she only ever made, like, this sum amount that she got paid for when it first started. I know that Jack Jr. sued at some point, saying that, like, rightfully they exploited his mother and that they should, like, pay her for that money now, but that lawsuit ended up not going through in his favor. But it's so fucked up.
Yeah, that sucks so much.
Like so many musicians were exploited and continue to be exploited by the music industry.
But particularly Black musicians. Still today, though, very openly in the 1920s.
Did you have a favorite part of the movie?
It's so heartbreaking, but the scene where Lucille breaks up with Bessie.
Oh my God.
It's such a strong scene.
It's so
basically what happens is that Bessie is laying in like the clawfoot bathtub in the middle of the room for some reason. Uh-huh. Why is it in the middle of the room other than for a beautiful shot? I don't know. And Lucille says, I just want a normal life. And there's like a moment of silence where Bessie like looks at her and she sits in the tub. And then Lucille just says, thank you. And she leaves. And that's
it.
Oh
my God.
And as soon as she leaves the room, Bessie just starts silently weeping. And it's so hard to watch, but
it's so, so sad.
I know.
Man, there was like another really good Lucille moment. Like after Bessie like messes up the audition for the record company the first time, she's like back at her house and she's like, she's having like a plate of food and drinking gin. And her brother and her husband are like yelling about the audition and stuff like that. And then her girlfriend just like comes up to her and just like hugs her. And like, she's just like, it's okay, it'll pass. And it's just like, so it's very sweet and tender.
I know. The scene early on where they're in the boarding house together, laying in the bed, like cuddling, is also just so sweet.
Yeah, and they're like giggling, and then the owner of the boarding house is like, "You better not have any men in there," and they're like, "Just us girls."
Also, the scene where Lucille is trying to pull it out of Bessie that to get Bessie to say "I love you."
Oh yeah, no.
I know that scene is also so hard to watch, but so good. Basically, they're laying in bed, and Lucille just keeps saying, like, "Isn't there anything you want to tell me? Isn't there anything you want to say to me?" And Bessie just keeps going, like, "No, like, it's fine.
I care for you."
I care for you. And then eventually she's like, "Well, let me show you how I feel," and just kisses her. And then the scene ends.
Yeah. Well, it fades to black because then they fuck.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Which is funny that she gets a sex scene with Richard that is very explicit, but not one with Lucille. Dries, I wonder who was holding you back on that one.
I know.
Who in the production room was telling you not to?
It's okay. You can tell us, Dries.
I don't think she tells anybody that she loves them in this entire film.
Yeah.
I think that it's something that Lucille took very personally, but it's not something that Bessie did or said to anybody.
Yeah. Well, there's the scene too with her bootlegger Richard, because with her marriage to Jack G in the movie, it's open pretty much that like both of them understand that they're like having affairs on the side, until at one point they're supposed to not do that. And it, you know, that goes how it goes. But with her bootlegger, like, she's paying him for the liquor, and he's like, "No, I don't want to, like, I'm just gonna start giving you the liquor now because I don't want to be your business partner. I like want to be your boyfriend." He like tries to give her the money back that she was gonna pay him, and she like won't take it. And so then he keeps like using the money that she's paying him to buy her gifts and sneaking the gifts in with the gin when he gives her.
Like, nice earrings, etc. Yeah. Another thing is that, like, though Jackie and Bessie were both having affairs and they both knew this, first of all, the cataclysmic events stem from Bessie learning that he was funding another musician's career with her money.
Yeah.
Second of all, he was incredibly, like, homophobic and very upset that she was dating women. That was something that he, like, never understood in real life. That's not depicted in the film, but, like, in real life, something that he was very against. So,
oh, no.
It was, she also kept that part kind of quiet from him. Like, it wouldn't have mattered quite so much if he found out that she was with Richard, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, actually, with, like, the scene where Bessie finds out that Jack is funding somebody else, like, that did happen in real life, and it was, he had actually come to her and proposed, like, "Hey, there's this idea that I have for a show for you that I want you to do. I just need the money to produce it." And so she gave him like $2,000 or something. And then he just turned around and used that to fund a show for his mistress, which is so fucked up.
I know. So awful.
Yeah.
Can I share a little bit about how this movie got made?
Oh, yeah, please. I would love that.
I believe that the screenplay was written sometime in the 1980s, actually. So 20 to 30 years before the movie actually came out. But the studio that was going to produce it, they ended up stopping the project because they had financial issues and thought that they were going to go bankrupt. So then it got put on pause, and then in the early 90s, the screenplay started kind of making the rounds again, and it had a couple of potential producers. When this happened, the screenwriter, Horton Foote, bought his own screenplay back from the studio he had initially sold it to, and he also bought the film production rights back from Chris Albertson, who is a jazz journalist who wrote Bessie's biography. He based the screenplay off of the biography, and so Albertson held the rights. Chris Albertson had personally said that he thought that Queen Latifah should be the lead, and he said that in the 90s.
Wow.
That was at the height of Queen Latifah's career. She was still doing her rap music. She was on Living Single and just breaking into acting, and he was like, "Queen Latifah, perfect fit." But the project never took off the ground because Foote just couldn't find the funding. Like, nobody would agree to make the movie.
Man.
Unfortunately, in 2009, about 20 years later, Foote passed away. And when this happened, his daughter inherited the screenplay and the film rights. She took them to HBO and she was like, let's make a deal. And they agreed. And once it was in HBO's hands, they even managed to get Queen Latifah on the project.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. So I thought it was kind of incredible, you know, like that this was written so long ago and was just waiting for the opportunity to be made. And they had this vision for it. But like, you know, come 2015, that was the time when it could finally happen.
That makes sense. Because I had seen a quote from Queen Latifah where she said that she had been waiting 20 years to like, or she'd been preparing for this role for 20 years. And I was like, I don't really understand. But now I get it.
Yeah. Yes, oh literally.
Literally. That's so funny. Also, oh my God, this is like actually kind of blowing my mind because like Queen Latifah is so beautiful and is kind of just like out of time and like ageless in my brain. But it's just so weird to think of that she was like at the height of her career in the 90s. Like,
yeah,
how does she still look so good?
I know. Queen Latifah, impeccable. When this movie came out in 2015, obviously, like I said, it won 4 Emmys and several other awards. But it also became the most watched HBO original movie of all time. And it still held that title for a year after its release in 2016. Nice. So it was massively popular when it came out and got incredible reviews, as it justifiably deserved. It's a great movie. Before we talk about Dee Reese, do you want to talk about Queen Latifah, since we're already talking about her?
Sure, your celebrity crush.
I know. Oh my God, I am obsessed with her.
When did you first get a crush on Queen Latifah?
Oh, forever. Like, I feel like Queen Latifah is one of the first celebrities where I was like, Queen Latifah is really hot and cool. I think that part of the reason that I like Queen Latifah so much is that she has this energy where it's just like, you are so strong and cool and like impressive. Like, not only is she really pretty, but she has so many different talents and she's such a great actress. It's hard not to love her.
I know. She's so good at singing.
I know. Have you ever listened to her rap music?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God, you should. Her most popular song was UNITY, or Unity. Queen Latifah, her sexual orientation has been gossip for as long as she's had a career. Literally forever, people have gossiped about her sexual orientation. But Queen Latifah is also incredibly quiet about her personal life and never shares information about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fair, in my opinion. When you're a celebrity and dealing with the public constantly, I completely get wanting to have your personal life be separate from that. Queen Latifah being interested in women has been like an open secret forever. Like, and if you know situation. And if you don't, then you're not paying close enough attention. She has been dating / married. Who knows? Again, because she's so private about her life, I don't know what their actual status is. But she's been with her partner since like 2013. So for like 9 years now. And she publicly came out for the very first time last year in June of 2021. She received the BET Black Entertainment Television Lifetime Award for her career as rapper, actress, producer, etc. And in her closing remarks, when she gave her speech, she thanked her partner, Ebony Nichols, and their son, Rebel. They have a son together. And then she said, happy Pride. So just thought that was really cool. But
that is really cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I actually didn't know that she had a longtime partner.
Mm-hmm.
Aw.
I know. Again, very private about her personal life.
Yeah. Good for her, honestly.
Yeah. Personally, so during quarantine, I watched the entirety of her television sitcom, Living Single, which I like can give a 100% wholehearted recommendation for. I love television sitcoms, especially ones from the 80s and 90s. But Living Single is by far the best one that I've watched. There's just so much good shit going on in that show. Have you watched any of Living Single, Erin?
No, I've just like seen like the clips that you've sent me.
It's because it's so good.
It's so good.
You should watch it.
I really should. We could. Oh, 5 seasons. Uh-oh. I was going to be like, we could do it for the podcast.
They're 20-minute episodes. There is actually one episode that I want to do for the podcast.
Oh, specific episode.
Just to give the most basic overview, I know we're in our Bessie episode, but the living single overview.
It's irrelevant.
So it aired from 93 to 98, and it's about six young New Yorkers who are building their careers, having their love lives, and they're just like hanging out in these decadent, fancy apartments. Literally, Friends was a blatant ripoff of Living Single. Like, straight up six friends building their careers, living in luxury apartments in New York. Like, it 100% it is a ripoff of Living Single. But Living Single does it so much better than Friends, which is just all the more of a nail in the coffin for Friends as a franchise. Like,
yeah.
The thing about Living Single, too, is that they featured queer characters multiple times as guest stars. Including Rosie O'Donnell. I would love to watch that episode with you too.
Wait, I think, okay, this is also a sidetrack. Why, when I was last with you, I was like, why do people hate Rosie O'Donnell? Why do people hate Rosie O'Donnell? What did she do?
And she's mean.
She's mean. Man, why is it always fucking her and Ellen? Though I think Ellen was a little bit more than mean.
People think that she isn't funny, that she's obnoxious.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, now I'm on a Reddit thread about why people hate Rosie O'Donnell. They think that she's too political.
Oh, no.
Notably, I guess she invited Tom Selleck on her show and then blindsided him by asking him a bunch of questions about his opinions on gun ownership.
Huh.
And she also spoke a lot of shit about the movie Fight Club because she thought it was bad. like stuff like that. I don't know. She was being hostile to people who disagreed with her. People think she's annoying. Okay. I honestly, she doesn't like Donald Trump. I don't know why people. I don't know why people hate Rosie O'Donnell so much. Honestly.
It's like the fucking state of the world where it's like, do people hate this person because they're opinionated, or do people hate this person because they said something racist? like the same amount of ire. It's like, oh my god.
If we do our Living Single episode, I'll do a deeper dive to figure it out.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm so sorry.
But to be real. No, it's okay. That was a great question. But specifically, the Living Single episode that I am interested in talking about with you is the one where Queen Latifah's character Khadija, her college roommate comes to visit, and when she comes to visit, she comes out as a lesbian, and she invites her to her wedding. And Khadija has to reconcile with the fact that she did not know this entire time that her like close friend and college roommate was a lesbian, because she never felt like comfortable telling her. And she like takes on a lot of guilt. Like, was I a bad friend? Like,
oh, wow.
How could it be that she never trusted me enough to tell me this, because I would have understood? And then they have like a long conversation about like how difficult it is to come out. And it's very good representation for the 90s on TV, honestly. Like, it's really good. And there's also the like, I couldn't tell you because I was in love with you twins.
Yo!
Which is also so fun.
Yo! Yeah, so. oh my god, I love that. That would be so interesting to do, because one of our first episode ideas, just as like a practice episode, was doing an episode of Friends where they go to the gay wedding.
Erin, literally, wedding. I was just about to bring this up.
Yeah, like, and so it would be fun to like compare those. Yes.
I know. Yeah, I think that it would be really fun. Yeah, Friends also has a lesbian wedding episode where the wedding is it's. Not that the wedding is what's the word I'm looking for? Ordained. Facilitated by who's the person that
the priest?
Yeah, but what's it called the when ordainer? They do it? No.
Isn't it ordained?
No, it's that you become minister? Ordained to do what at a wedding? To
marry?
Yes, it's to marry people, but I don't. Okay, it does not matter. I don't marry care that
people
much.
Word. marrying. That's what comes
all
up.
All right, fine. So I thought it was, you know, this whole sidebar about this does not matter at all, because I thought that Lea Delaria, who plays Big Boo in Orange is the New Black, was the one who married the two. Yes, thank you. Okay, I thought that she was the one who officiated the wedding. However, she is not. She just hits on Phoebe. But yeah, she's there, and we all love Lea Delaria as well.
Of course, yeah.
Have you seen that she's on TikTok recently?
No.
She made this TikTok that went viral where she's like, somebody called her mommy in a TikTok, and she responded and was like, don't you mean daddy?
Yes!
And she went absolutely viral for it. It was incredible.
Oh my god. Yeah. I fucking love that.
I know. What an icon. Okay, anyway, that's all I have to say about Queen Latifah. I just love her.
She's great.
Dee Rees, though.
Dee Rees.
Who directed this movie. She, iconic director, doesn't have a huge body of work, but excited to see what she does next. Dee Rees, like, got her start working under Spike Lee.
Mm-hmm.
While she was working with Spike Lee on some of his movies, she was writing scripts for her own movies, including Pariah, which Spike Lee was an executive producer for. Pariah came out in 2011. Again, I want to do an episode about it, but it's about a young Black teenager who's coming into her butch identity, and it's really good. Rees herself is a lesbian, and she has said that the movie is semi-autobiographical.
Ooh.
Rees also made the film Mudbound, which came out in 2017, and is based on a novel of the same name. And it's about two World War II veterans, one who's white and one who's Black. And they both return to their homes in rural Mississippi, and both end up addressing their war-related PTSD, but they also both end up addressing racism in their own ways. I don't know how that plays out because I haven't seen it, but after reading the synopsis, I was interested for sure.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I would just love to see more movies by Rees in general.
One that maybe you shouldn't watch is I think it's her most recent film, called The Last Thing He Wanted, which came out in 2020. This was a political thriller that was heavily panned by critics, who called it impressively incomprehensible. Too much, but also not enough. They also said, the last thing he wanted is the last thing the viewers wanted.
Apparently has Anne Hathaway and Ben Affleck and Willem Dafoe in it.
It does. And there are a few other famous celebrities in it as well. The basic plot is that Anne Hathaway is a journalist who stops covering the 1984 presidential election because her father is dying and she leaves to care for him. And when he dies, she inherits his role as an arms dealer in Central America. And through this, she learns about the Iran-Contra affair.
Huh.
And apparently it's just so bad. I think that everybody gets to make one shitty movie.
Yeah, honestly.
So it's fine.
I mean, if you make enough movies, one of them is going to be bad.
Right. Bessie is so good. Pariah is so good. You gotta have just one absolute stinker in there.
I haven't seen this movie, and I just learned about it, and I don't know anything about it, but I don't blame Rees. I bet it was, like, the producer's fault. Like, there's so many, like, stars in this. I'm sure, like, whatever place was funding this movie had their fingers all up in it and stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
I hope that Dee Rees got paid well.
I know. When I think about people who made, like, one particularly horrible movie, we just mentioned Spike Lee. Gotta once again bring up Spike Lee's Old Boy.
Spike Lee's Old Boy.
Truly one of the most heinous films I've ever seen in my life.
Truly. Oh my god.
That's all I gotta share.
Thinking about Spike Lee's Old Boy makes me think about the fact that I think it's, like, in production now that they're making Train to Busan, but in America, and it's Train to New York.
No.
Yeah. Can you imagine taking the Amtrak during a zombie apocalypse?
I'm literally just sitting here like a blank expression. Every single thought has left my brain. Yikes is all I have to say about that one.
Seriously. even like, honestly, if there was a zombie apocalypse in New York, like the last thing I would ever do is get on any type of public transit.
Like, oh my god, the subways.
Oh my god. One of my friends got COVID and was being super, super careful, but had to take the train to work. So it's extremely likely that she got fucking COVID from the subway despite wearing a mask. Because they pack you on in there during rush hour. Yep. Even with so many people less that like aren't commuting. Public transit in America is so bad.
Public transit in America is so bad.
Anyway, you know what's not bad, but good?
What?
Queerness! Woo! I did like a very, very small amount of research before this episode about queerness in the blues and just queerness in general for that music movement and in the 1920s and 1930s. So yeah, and you actually, in the movie, you see Ma Rainey like do a performance in drag, and so much so that like she actually comes up to Bessie at the bar like ahead of time, and Bessie just thinks that she's a guy like trying to hit on her. And the song that she sings in the movie is Prove It On Me Blues, where which you get to hear a little bit of, and it's just so good. Like, one of the lines in it is, went out last night with a crowd of my friends, must have been women, because I don't like no men.
I know, it's so good.
It's so fucking good. Women dressing in drag at the time was called bulldagger, or like a bulldike, and I guess was very popular at the time. I'm glad that it was portrayed in this movie. And it also would just come up in songs in general. Usually it was kind of in the sense of like, this bulldagger is like moving in on like somebody who I want to move in on, or like in the Beady Woman Blues, Bulldagger Women Blues. Some of the lyrics are like, a bulldagger walks just like a natural man, like if she takes a drink of gin, like she can, she like you won't know the difference kind of stuff. And that was sung by Lucille Bogan. There was also a song, Boy in the Boat, which I guess was actually pretty popular and sung by a couple other people. I heard a version that was sung by George Hanna. And in that, one of the lyrics is, if you see two women walking hand in hand, just shake your head and try to understand. Which I also We get it. Don't shake your head. Nod your head. I guess I feel a little bit odd saying this term. So understand that I'm just saying it for historical purposes. But another thing that would come up in blues songs quite frequently was like a sissy, or just a feminine man. And a popular blues song of the times was Sissy Man Blues. And this was sung by many different blues men singers. And one of the lines was, if you can't bring me a woman, just bring me a sissy man. Just to like kind of show how open queerness was and how prevalent it was in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting stuff. One other person who I want to mention is Gladys Bentley. Bentley appeared at several gay nightclubs in New York and Chicago in the 1920s. And she was usually like backed up with a line of drag queens. And then she herself would be in drag and men's clothes. She would flirt with women in the audience and stuff like that. But as you also might expect, she was harassed just for how like prominent her queerness was. And she later on like claimed to have married a man, even though I guess the man that she claimed to have married said that they actually weren't married. And then actually later in the 1950s, she then said that she had been cured of her homosexuality after taking female hormones, which I suspect that might not be true. As you would imagine, but like I'm sure she was like trying to fight off like all of the hate that was coming at her.
Right, there was something else going on with that one.
Oh yeah, man, yeah.
The blues, so much more queer than what we normally see as the blues. I feel like, or what we normally think of the blues to be. Personally, I feel like I don't know that much about early 20th century history, so it like in general. So I think it's always really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and like going into the Harlem Renaissance and stuff like that of the 1930s, like that obviously was, there was a lot of homosexual stuff going on then too. as there is in all times, but you know.
Affectionately described homosexual stuff.
Homosexual stuff. Affectionate. and yeah, I think, fuck, if only I could remember anything from my like film history courses in college, but like also in film at the time, like because a lot of theater people are of the queer community, like movie production it featured a lot of queer people in it, so much so that then like the like purity codes had to be put in place to stop all the I don't know, just people gay being behavior. Themselves, gay behavior. Wow.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and I'm sure that was kind of hand in hand too then with like blues music and, you know, mm-hmm. puritanical like conservatives like feeling challenged right. by being normalized, blah.
I feel like at the same time some of the blues performers, especially female blues performers, were breaking so many boundaries that like adding being gay to the list wasn't too big of a stretch, you know.
Yeah.
Like for Bessie for Bessie Smith, Ma Rainey, Josephine Baker, they all like we're drinking, we're partying, we're talking openly about having like crazy good sex, like we're like it doesn't like they were already breaking so many social norms at that point, and especially as Black women, again being gay, yeah. it's just like, well, that's just another like
yeah
just another crazy thing they're doing.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah, I love it personally.
Yeah, one of Bessie's lines like pretty early on in the movie is like I'm not afraid of going to jail, like in the aspect of
yeah.
her like openly drinking but also openly being with women, which was illegal.
Yeah, yeah, and also about physically attacking men who assault her. She was
yeah.
yeah, I'll go to jail.
That was
like,
fucking
I'll kill you. Yeah.
There were multiple times in the movie where she would just like, I mean, the movie literally opens with she's like fooling around with a guy like behind the theater that she's performing at, and he gets like too handsy with her and she's like, stop. And then he's like, no, no, like it's fine. And he hits her and then she stabs him with a piece of glass and it's like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah. And then, if I recall correctly, doesn't she say something like, I thought that we could just make out and have a fun time, but then you had to go and do this, so you
yeah.
got what you had coming, do you? And then
yep,
she goes out on stage and performs, yep. bleeding profusely from the head. Like,
yes!
It's like, oh my god.
My
yeah.
god, I love it. So good.
But I hate it, but I love it. You know,
right.
Bessie, at the same time that she, like, is so strong and is doing all of this shit, like, she has had to become strong to survive. Literally.
Yeah, that's
so,
fair. That's fair.
As a queer, dark-skinned Black woman in America in the 20s, trying to break it in the entertainment business with severe childhood trauma. Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
So, wow, I loved it. I love the movie.
It was so good. So, so good. Oh my god.
Thank you for, I found it and I was like, I literally have to watch this. Like,
right.
100%
well, not,
critical.
I can't wait to do Pariah, and I'm excited to do Living Single too. Let's go.
I'll put them on the schedule for various points in the next year.
Nice.
We can do them. Sammy, just featured on our last episode, Samantha, bought me a DVD copy of Pariah for Christmas. It's so sweet.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Well,
I know.
I'm gonna come over and watch it with you.
Okay, uh-huh. You should. She was like, I hope you haven't seen this, but, and then gave it to me. And I was like, you don't even understand. I've been wanting to rewatch this. So bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I have seen it and I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's end.
Yeah.
Unless you have anything else to say.
No, I think I'm all out of stuff.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. You should consider following us on Twitter at GaysGays if you are not already doing that, because we respond to our DMs and we post things sometimes. We post updates about when the next episodes are coming out. So if you like having those reminders, that's pretty much all we post, really. You can also email us at erin@gaysgays.com if you're looking to get in touch with one of us specifically. I'm Erin Wormmoon.
And I'm Erin Fishwife.
And we would love recommendations, suggestions, ideas, thoughts about Our next topic, which is going to be Other Side Picnic, which I don't know that much about. Erin, what do you know about Other Side Picnic other than that your partner Stevie recommended it for us?
I know it's an anime and that it's like either sci-fi or fantasy, and it's something about girls fighting monsters maybe or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting. I just put it on the list because Stevie said we should do it, and I trust Stevie.
I know, yeah. That's...
Many thanks to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for letting us use their songs Look and Love and You Pretty Thing for our intro music and our outro music. Go buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com.
I mean, we were just talking about music makers getting like ripped off by,
seriously,
by music distributors. Like, oh, this is a great God. Way to like circumvent that by buying directly from them. It's
literally on Bandcamp.
Yes, literally, it's on, yeah.
And it's so good and it's so sweet. Until next episode's Other Side Picnic, I'm Erin.
And I'm Erin.
And we are gay. And that is all.
Bye. Bye. Yeah.